So here we go. I am indeed going to be speaking today about a project called Baby Steps to Health. And it's an opportunity to do oral health and obesity prevention together in one sort of nutrition education project that we worked on in Boston. I'm indebted and grateful to my other co-authors. We're all in various parts of the Tufts University system. I don't have any no disclosures. Sorry, I'm not making anything on this at all. And I'd like to note that the money for this came from Tufts Clinical and Translational Science and the Translational Science Institute, or the CTSI grant. So the rationale for this project is very straightforward. We are all in this room abundantly familiar with the statistics on obesity, and are really, I think, even more abundantly aware of the obesity risk in very, very young children. So even as the young children are becoming more overweight, and we're also recognizing the value of those first couple of years in terms of determining diets and the impact of parenting style on that, we're also learning that oral health in general is improving for most Americans, but for youth of very young age, dental caries is actually increasing. There's not very recent data, but the last NHANES data points that in fact, that there is an increase in dental caries. So that's sort of the backdrop. And then there's a great recognition among the societies of oral health and pediatricians that there's a wonderful synergy between the messages for obesogenic and cariogenic foods and a real opportunity for some salient messages. So a couple of these are around juice and sugary beverages, frequent snacking on high carbohydrate foods. There's also some synergy around these prevention methods of breastfeeding and parenting styles, different kinds of habits. So we really thought it was a terrific opportunity to partner with dentists in this opportunity. The other thing that's not up here on this slide, I was just talking to my colleagues, is that, I don't know, how many of you have had the opportunity to work in oral health or with dentists? Oh, I just want to tell you, it's such an opportunity. Our dental professionals are very, very open to collaboration. They're really interested in the sort of the whole child and getting to be part of the whole bandwagon of people collaborating and groups collaborating. I really encourage you to reach out to your dental professionals. They've been more open than, I come to say, than most of the other groups of folks that I've been trying to work with over the years. So it's a real opportunity, truly. We also know that those first couple of years of life are so abundantly important in terms of setting up habits for the rest of life. I love this quote from DiTilio: "The first 2 years of life provide a potential window of opportunity like no other to establish feeding, dietary, and behavioral patterns that remain with an individual throughout life." So it was really an honor, I have to say, to get to work, like I said, with dentists who are very interested in this project and who were open to providing a window into their dental clinic for this work. So we got this grant to do a one-year pilot study, and it is very pilot, and it had three aims. Really, the first was to evaluate the potential, and just really the potential, to impact parent and child behaviors that could promote nutrition and oral health. So we're really looking at very short-term efficacy and acceptability for both the, mostly for the clients or the patients, but also for the dental staff. Assess the feasibility and the acceptability of implementing this brief primary care obesity prevention in a dental setting. This is a very, I'll talk more about it, but this was in a baby clinic, so this is for very, very young children, 6 to 24 months of age. So this is usually their first dental visit. And then we also wanted to assess the opportunities for integrating this kind of an approach into more standards of care. We're going to focus on this first one for this presentation. So this was, as I mentioned, a 12-month study. The participants were patients 6 to 24 months, and their parents or their guardians, most of them were parents. It was based, as I mentioned, at the Tufts University School of Dental Medicine in their dental clinic. And as I mentioned, this was predominantly their first visit to a dentist. And the clinic here serves a largely Chinese descent population. We're based right in Chinatown. It's a very interesting group of folks. The efficacy study, or trying to assess the potential of this approach, was a six-month intervention that we, as I mentioned, implemented this protocol during the baby clinic, and then we had a one-month follow-up with the patients via a telephone call. We collected some quantitative data at the start of the study when the patients were enrolled, and also at the time of the phone call follow-up, and collected some qualitative data. Some of the theoretical underpinnings were really based on these two theories, the self-determination theory and sort of behavioral motivation, primarily through motivational interviewing. We really use these two theories because they seem to reinforce the motivation and to the elements that we thought parents would respond to. Self-determination theory really looks at and tries to promote behaviors that are already salient to parents and not try to, like, pound your head against the wall. And we found, particularly with these young children, that you know, as long as they were developmentally appropriate kind of messages, there was some resonance for the parents. And then the behavioral motivation, especially the motivational interviewing, we really used to try to establish some goal setting so that we were really focusing on just one or two behaviors at most and kind of keep it simple. Here's a flow chart of our intervention design. And there was an intake form that was completed in the waiting room before they went in to see the dentist, and an assessment of the risk based on that intake form that included both some nutrition. This was predominantly nutrition because the dentist was handling more of the dental risk on their side of the coin. And then based on that assessment of risk, we selected or highlighted several different goals that would look like they might be appropriate, did some negotiation with the patient to decide on a goal, presented a magnet to reinforce that goal, and then sent people on their way and did a one-month follow-up phone call. So these are just some of the forms that we use. They all had to be translated into Chinese and then back translated and translated again, and, you know, lots of different changes. There was quite a long formative period, and I have to say the forms still don't reflect all the changes that needed to be done. It's a good thing it was a pilot. But the participants completed a form that, as you can see, it's a pilot, so we were really looking more at trying to understand the content rather than the flow of the intake form. I think next time through we'll try to make something that looks a little jazzier, easier to fill out. And then based on what the participant completed, we had a staff who actually entered the information into a computer, calculated the risk scores that we had assigned, and came up with different assessments of risk. Then based on those risk scores, like I said, you know, next steps are to do a little more computer-generated help on this process. But some of this information was then transferred to this action plan to help orient the dentist who was doing the counseling in terms of where to direct their attention. So based on these different elements, so if it was sort of a high risk, they would circle the red, stop, and then if it was sort of moderate risk, it was the yellow and the green, don't worry about it. They might circle two or three different sections on the form, and then, like I said, have a conversation with the patients about what they thought they might be able to tackle. And then they were offered, like I said, these magnets, and these are the kinds of goals that they would have chosen. So one of the primary goals that we were working with was trying to get babies off the bottle, especially when they went to bed, as many of you already know. So this was the kind of goal that they would come up with. or in the more dietary, the parent behavior side of the goals that we were searching for was more around food rewards and those kind of behaviors. These are a couple of examples. So in terms of our results, our study participants, we had 50 patients that we enrolled, so a child, a baby, and a parent pair. They were on average about 20 months, although there was quite a range up to 3 years. Mostly there were mothers that were the respondent that were bringing them in, or split half and half gender. The predominant race ethnicity was of Asian descent, and the majority had come as their initial visit to the dentist. So these are really little kids. They're really cute. They're like sitting on their mom's lap. The dentist is working with them. These dentists, these are all students or first-year residents at this point. So they're learning how to work with children. They're talking to the moms. They're trying to translate from English into Chinese. It's quite a scene. But it was, because people were so eager to work on this, it actually all worked out quite well. And in fact, our group of participants were very eager to be there, and 92% completed the follow-up phone call. And in fact, what we saw was that 100% of the families that we asked to participate did in fact participate. When we asked them whether they thought that it was useful, the vast majority thought it was useful. But it did add about almost 20 minutes to the routine dental exam. It was a little hard to tell whether some of that was translation time going back and forth, so we need some more work to figure all some of these things out. Here are some of the response categories that came up from this intake form. So it's, like I said, it's a combination of sort of straight behaviors that have implications for both dental and nutrition, as well as some of these parental practices. So in a Chinese community, making sure that your child finishes their plate of food is incredibly important. So that actually came out as one of our top kind of risks. Whether we would pursue that as a behavioral target, we found that was a little touchy. We really concentrated more on the straight behaviors, like the sleeping with a beverage or high carbohydrate snacks, those kinds of behaviors that are very clearly connected to the two disciplines. The behavior goals, though, that were chosen by the parents then were, like I said, a negotiation. So the dentist would work together to do this motivational interviewing technique where they try to figure out what behaviors were truly salient, they thought they were important to the parents, and they thought they were doable. So those were the two combinations that they were looking for. And at that intersection was where they were looking for that goal. So the biggest goal that was chosen was this no bedtime bottle. And again, most of these kids are transitioning, so eventually they're going to get off the bottle anyway. But it was a helpful, or it was a, you know, to start getting them down that path a little more quickly. So this no bedtime bottle, some of the eating rules and habits were go-getters, using an open cup. So some of these shifts to other kinds of feeding strategies were among the top behavioral goals. At 1 month follow-up, we asked whether they remembered getting a magnet, and the vast majority did, in fact, remember getting a magnet. They said they remembered the goal, and for the most part, in fact, the goal actually matched what we had in our records as the goal that they had chosen. And almost all of them, 90%, said that they had made changes to the behavior. So, you know, we can debate endlessly about how valid that is, but the patients that we talked to clearly thought that they had made some changes in a positive direction, and they thought the magnet helped. Now, I do have to remind everybody, or just state, that the woman who called the patients back was a Chinese speaker, delightful. She had a fabulous rapport with the patients, and whether it was somebody else that had made these calls back, I don't know whether it would have been as good a success rate and whether they would have been as happy. So it's very clear that the messenger is really important. I think that is, you know, a message that we keep learning over and over again how important the deliverer is. At 1 month, again, we asked whether they thought that baby steps had a positive impact. These were very polite people. They all thought that it was a great program. They were very deferential. They were very, very, but they were genuinely pleased to be asked again. They loved the phone call follow-up. I think that was my biggest take-home of this, was that follow-up phone call was probably as important as the initial visit. They got a chance to talk. They got a chance to follow up, and they felt very validated for their efforts. I'll be very quick. We had some qualitative responses. Some of the messages we got around positive changes. Just a couple here. I offered breastfeeding before brushing teeth at bedtime. I gave less in-between meal snacks. It was hard in the beginning, but it was accepted after continued trying. Those kinds of messages we heard quite frequently. They thought they were satisfied with the program for the most part. The magnet was very helpful, always visible on the fridge. But importantly, I think this was really important. They said the timing was good, that the baby was just starting to eat solid food. So a lot of these little behavioral pushes or cues were headed people in directions. They were already going down that path, but it was a little reinforcement that it was a good idea and that it was a good thing for them to make the push to do. There was a little resistance to change and some difficulty. Here's an example. I do not want to try using an open cup because all my friends in China are using bottles for their babies. So we did get some pushback on some of these items, but again, it was less than we expected. There were also some comments about not so excited about the venue. I feel it is weird to deliver nutrition and eating information in dental clinic. I prefer to get this information at the pediatrician's office. So we did get a couple of those, but again, not so much. Clearly, this was a very small study and a short time frame. The risk determination that we made was based on literature, but it was not a validated instrument that we were using. We clearly think that the behavioral changes could have been overinflated, but there was, on the other hand, what we were really looking at was to see whether we thought that this had potential rather than whether it was really measuring accurately these behavior changes. So just in closing up here, we did think that the dental setting holds promise for this kind of work, that the intake form being completed in the waiting room and then presented to the dentist with our reports back from the dental staff was that was very helpful, and it left room for some more dietary counseling and sort of opened some doors. We clearly needed some more evidence-based algorithms to identify high risk, some computer-assisted module for dietary practices would, I think, probably be useful in some settings. I'm not sure it's the only way to go. And clearly there would be more feasibility and acceptability testing that would need to be done in other settings. But it was what it was. It was a pilot, and I think it bore some fruit. Just going forward, like I mentioned, I truly was not expecting that the value of the follow-up phone call and of the opportunities that this might present for alternative models. You know, a community health worker, not any particular reason why this information was not, it was nutrition information and there were some nuances, but it was pretty straightforward kind of nutrition education that was being delivered. And right now we're setting up a new study to work with early care, early education and care centers, so more child care settings, and doing a similar kind of a protocol. Also thinking about more computer-assisted models. And that's where we are. So thanks.
Thank you.